Trish, part one. The story starts here. PAFA has its yearly opening, and I explore it with Lisa. I'm looking for Trish's paintings. She has invited me. She is nowhere in sight. There. It's her self-portrait on the wall called The Vessel. Sepia, brown, colors that have Spanish resonance. Trish's in blue, half-profiled, wearing an expression of pensive angst. She looks at me from the painting. She's my soul sister. She's under my skin. Our first date, Lisa still in the dark, an operation I enact covertly. We are going to see a movie, Amelie. She is merely cute. I sit through this for you, Trish. I dialogue with Bukowski while I sit there. I deserve a blowjob for this. Hank is amused but reticent. Trish wears a green winter hat which now sits on her lap. Her hair is ponytailed. She has had a salad at Cosi. I am hungry. I enjoy my hunger. Mind fucked. Back at my place, 21st in Race, I play Trish sweet and dandy from The Harder They Come. She dances without restraint on the tan, carpeted floor. Something is becoming loose in us. Then she lay down on my floor in blue, as in The Vessel, and let me paw at her. Skyrocketing giddiness overtakes us. We're drinking grog, rum and water, from capacious blue mugs, each other's new toy. Look, I have in my pocket a copy of Aleister Crowley. It's red. I'm in an artist's studio. Winter, long, broad windows, sunset. It's going down. I'm in a wife beater with braces, mustachioed, jack-in-the-box. There's a portrait of Apollo on the wall, nude, in a field of purples and blues. He carries a fiddle. Trish and I are drinking cheap red wine. There's no one else, it seems, in the building. Pipes drone steadily. Warmed by the wine, we sneak into a dark bathroom. I crash through several floors of myself. Pull out couch. We're down for the count. I have my hands on her sex. She is shushing me. I make no noise. There's no sleep here. The windows represent being into a new space. Morning, we will walk back to my hood. We'll eat at my diner. I will feel on Cherry Street that I have never flown this fast around the universe. I will be all the worse for being happy. Lisa. Pancakes do not taste as they ever have before. They are ambrosial. Phone message. The first kiss of love. Now I cannot avoid telling Lisa. She takes it on the face, but not without a fight. Word has spread around the store. I wake up to find myself a bookstore Byron. Trish wavers. She aims to please everyone. She says she doesn't know. Then there is another that shows up. He's older. He dives headfirst into paint, but without painting. I have no defense against this first onslaught. I hold on tight. Part 2. First night at my place, I'm able to have Trish to look at up close. I noticed how different she is from Lisa. Long, lean torso, tiny breasts, narrow waist, flaxen straight hair that reaches down her back. She loves me wildly and with feeling. Hair upon the pillow like a sleepy golden storm. Trish slept late, yet she was out as soon as she was in. I'm with Roger again, she said, and pulled the plug. There was a period in which we could not talk to each other. I either had to have her, totally, or not at all. There'd be no gray for us. Was this karma for the manner in which I treated Lisa? Closing shift, Roger came to pick up Trish. I heaved against the glass doors before the manager came to let us out. Romantic poems were being written, informed by a kind of desperation. I read Dunn for a pen class and extrapolated his stance. Metaphysics abridging romanticism, and remembered that first night in which Trish and I read The Ecstasy to each other. Now she hoarded her body where I could not see. I have my own conceits, I thought to myself, walking home from Penn in rain. Spring rains, Trish returns. She seems chastened. There is a part of her that needs me. It is a part of her that she rebels against, so that her manner towards me takes the form of an interior war made exterior. My folks takes us to the Pink Rose Bakery on Bainbridge Street, and Trish and I share a big brownie. We go to the Eyes Gallery on South Street, and my mom learns Trish's eye, tastes. There is a loaded sky bearing down on us. Trish's eyes water. We are to spend the night at Trish's place. She lives with a handful of artists at 4325 Baltimore Ave. James is bipolar and always causing problems. Trish is turned on by him, but pretends not to be. Her room is uncarpeted, wooden slat floors, big wooden dresser, overlooking a quaint West Philly courtyard. There's a cat named Zuska, a preternaturally intelligent girl cat that plays with us. For some reason, we do not make love that night, and when I wake up, I am fit to burst. I send red signals. Trish's compassion overtakes her. I'm getting sucked off. Her glasses remain on. She's doing this because she loves me, and love waves are communicated in oral gestures. She means it. I can sense James in the courtyard listening. Will Trish close around me at the right moment, or will she miss? As I go off the edge, I feel her miss slightly and then hit, and I've left the planet. She's so far beneath me that there is no seeing her. She swallows me, and I will never leave her mouth again. It's sealed. Part 3. It happened again. Trish found someone to replace me with. She broke the news over the phone. I betrayed no emotion. Why was this happening? I felt I had already repaid my karmic debt of suffering to Lisa. This was overtime. This dude was a concierge at a fancy hotel. Byronic, Trish said. The first Byronic concierge ever, I thought. Trish insisted on telling me the story, and it was sordid, drunken, dumb. They met through a mutual friend at a bar. This concierge made a blatant play for her and she accepted it. They stumbled drunkenly to his apartment and slept together. At that point, they made a pact not to sleep with anyone else for the time being. They were saving each other from what they were already doing. I found the whole thing incoherent and lame. Why did Trish need to be saved from me? Why was this guy so eager to make a pact? Silent mode. I had Trish like a disease, but it helped not to talk to her. I needed to be cured of her just like she did of me. One day I had an appointment in Manayunk and I met a woman on the R6 train. She was a tall brunette, medium build, with black eyes and freckles. I was wearing my Shelley shirt. I am as wayward as Shelley, and that started the ball rolling. She was lively, easy to talk to. We made a date to meet soon after. Franklin Institute steps. There she sat in a long, sleeveless dress that was tie-dyed and had earth tones of hippie all over it. We're at my apartment. Her legs fall into my lap. We're naked. We feed on each other in the summer heat as the sun goes down. That's it. I'm cured. I can go after Trish again because I don't need to. I can want Trish again because I don't want her. Flesh equals flesh. Somehow Trish is open. We make plans to see a movie. I don't ask about the concierge. She offers no information. When she arrives at my pad, I help her out of a red cab. She's either drunk or stoned or both. She's in a frilly white skirt, hair bunned, languid, droopy eyelids. My body reacts. Now is the time I must claim her. She must be taken. I touch her in a hesitant way and she pulls me on top of her. Living room floor, lights on, sun setting, skirt hitched. Shirts on, tan carpet. For once, I worry not about pleasing her. I need to place myself in her as quickly as possible. I do so with a huge sense of triumph. She's my animal bride, and we've just been married. She tells me she's cheating on the concierge, but there's no remorse in her voice. It's the voice of one possessed. Interposition will not happen again. The only flesh that need be equaled is mine to hers. So the marriage begins. Yet I live in fear. At any moment, the rug can be pulled from beneath me. Am I replaceable?